This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. It's time to turn that frown upside down. Welcome to Wrestling with Optimism, where the world isn't ending and wrestling is still fun.
Welcome back to Wrestling with Optimism as we take this show in a little bit of a new direction. We start talking to people about their passions in this crazy, wonderful art form of professional wrestling. I'm Brad Stutz, alongside the history of WWE.com's Graham Coffin, and as always, our fearless, perpetually snowed-in producer, Dan McGinn. We are joined today by Michael Elliott of Elbow Productions, a cinematographer, a documentarian who has spoken with and recorded the stories and basically the life stories of many of wrestling's great legends over the past couple of years. Michael, it's great to have you on the show today, and we're going to get in-depth talking about some of the feature films that you've made and what's on the horizon. Thank you for joining us. And I guess first off, Michael, what inspired you to do this? What made you take the initiative and say, you know what, I'm going to document and record the life stories of wrestling legends?
Well, must add, the Boogie Woogie Man, Jimmy Valiant, is the one that got me into doing this stuff. I worked for a television station in Charlotte, North Carolina for the last 10 years, and I always go to the fan fest that are run by Craig Price, and just kind of met Jimmy there, and we kind of hit it off and became friends. And I just sent an email out of the blue, said, let's do a documentary about your life. And he was all for it. And it's been going ever since, about 5 years now.
So yes, Michael,
Jimmy's a great friend to the show. And Graham, I know you've had a great relationship with Jimmy over the years as well.
Yeah, and we talked about that on the last show. Michael, tell us a little bit about your background. What got you into this line of work and then opening the door to then take your skills into this direction?
Oh, well, I kind of just fell into the television business by accident. I didn't, you know, like most kids when they graduate high school, they don't really know what they want to do with their lives. I thought I wanted to be a professional wrestler. I'm not athletic enough. I knew I wouldn't make it in that business, so I kind of fell into doing television, and I still always had that love for pro wrestling, so I just kind of decided to combine the two. And like I said, when I met Jimmy, I just thought he was the perfect guy to work with right away, and that's just kind of where the wrestling thing started. But I've been working for a local CBS affiliate for a decade, just, you know, doing production, putting stuff out on television every day. So I like to think that what we're producing is, you know, professional quality, and people have really responded and enjoyed it over the last 5 years.
So tell me a little bit about your fandom background. When did you get into wrestling? Tell me about that time and your experiences. I'm guessing at a much younger age than what you are now.
Well, I remember watching it when I was a boy with my grandmother at her house. I don't know how old I was. I'm assuming it was the NWA, Jim Crockett Promotions, but that's all blurry to me. But I live in York, South Carolina. Every time the NWA would come to Rock Hill, South Carolina, if I went to the Coliseum, my dad would take me. And later on, you know, WCW would come around and WWF. And I've just been a fan since I was a little kid and just been watching it my whole life and continue to this day to be a fan. And just happy to be involved and working with a lot of the guys I grew up watching.
Run through maybe for anyone that's not familiar with some of the work you've done at Elbow Productions. Give us a little bit of the rundown. You said you started with the Boogie Woogie Man, Jimmy Valiant, and I know you've produced several other full-length feature documentaries. For anyone that may not be familiar with the work you've done, kind of give us the rundown of your professional resume as it comes to wrestling so far.
Oh, we just produced Ivan Koloff, the Russian Bear, the two-disc set with a two-hour documentary and a bonus disc of matches and stories that just came out that you can get at Elbow Productions www.weebly.com. We've also produced Harley Race, the greatest wrestler on God's green earth. Rock and Roll Never Dies, the story of Rock and Roll Express. Jim Crocker Promotions, The Good Old Days, which was featured at the FanFest and won the Wrestling Observer DVD of the Year for 2013. And History and Tradition, the story of the National Wrestling Alliance, which we're going to be re-releasing as a special collector's edition with the bonus disc and new features included in the old documentary that's coming out hopefully in a couple months.
Yeah, I absolutely thought the Crockett documentary was phenomenal. I give it my highest recommendation to anyone that has not seen it. Genuinely, one of my favorite documentaries that I have seen to date. As far as, I mean, I would put it on a par with any of the best documentaries produced by the WWE or anybody else. Talk about that experience for you, because I know it was different. It's a different experience producing a documentary on Jim Crockett Promotions as opposed to, say, one individual person. I know you got to conduct a slew of great interviews with a slew of amazing, talented people. Kind of talk about the journey from conception to completion of that Jim Crockett Promotions documentary.
Well, I just wrapped up the NWA World Title DVD, and I was over at High Spots, and they said, why don't you do a Jim Crockett documentary? And I said, I don't think that can be done. There's no footage. There's no B-roll. It will be just pictures, interviews. It'll be boring. Jim Crockett, you know, he's a hermit. He's not going to talk to anybody. I can't get in touch with any of the Crockett family, so what's the point in doing it? But then, you know, just thinking about it, I was like, well, I'll just give it a shot. So I just kind of started compiling interviews with guys that I worked with previously, you know, Jimmy Valiant, Rock and Roll Express, guys like that, and it just kind of started to snowball into something bigger. I hounded Jim Crockett, and I hounded David Crockett, and Jackie Crockett was very easy and great to get along with, and I hounded the Crockett to get on camera with me, and they finally, within 2 weeks of my deadline, because it was set to premiere at the NWA Fan Fest in Charlotte, so I had 2 weeks once I got them on camera to re-edit and include them in the documentary. So it was a great experience, but it was very stressful, and I'm very, very pleased with how it turned out, and hearing your thoughts on it, you know, makes it even better hearing that people are enjoying it. But it was probably the most stressful, hectic documentary that I've worked on. Obviously, it was the biggest one and most successful one, but it was a pleasure, and I'm glad that people loved it.
How long roughly did you work on that one from that day at High Spots where they said, you know, let's do this project until, you know, completion in time for the NWA Fan Fest that year? For anyone that doesn't know, the NWA Fan Fest is in the summer. Usually it's the first weekend of August or the last weekend of July here in Charlotte, North Carolina. And a lot of the great stars from the 70s and 80s and 90s and even today come together. And it's always a great time if you're ever anywhere in the region of the Carolinas, or if you want to plan a vacation around it. It's a great weekend-long convention. Graham and I go pretty much every year. But how long did it take, basically, from that idea, that day at High Spots, the idea of conception, all the way to completion, Michael?
Well, I worked on it for about 4 or 5 months on my own. And then once I realized, hey, this is financially something more than what I can handle, High Spots came in and they took it over, and then we took another 3 to 5 months, I think. It took about a year to work on, but getting to the Crocketts was the main goal, and it just happened to happen at the last second. But it took about a good year.
What was your experience like with the Crocketts? Like you mentioned, they've kind of been reclusive and have shied away from making many public appearances having to do with wrestling in the past 20 or so years. You mentioned having to basically hound them to finally get them to agree to take part in this. What was your experience like with them once you finally got together?
Oh, it was phenomenal. They were great. Had lunch with Jim Crockett. We just talked about our families, and, you know, we didn't really talk about wrestling except for when we were on camera, but it was great. You know, flying out to Dallas, Texas, when I got him on the phone for the first time, he was taking a nap. Well, oh my God, this guy's taking a nap. He's gonna be ill. He's gonna say no, but he was the nicest guy I've ever talked to. He said, you know, if you want to do it, fly out to Dallas, and when you get here, just give me a call and we'll do it. And we flew all the way out there. I was so nervous, like he was going to back out on me. But Nice guy showed up. We had some lunch and then shot that interview, and the rest was history. He was kept calling him Mr. Crockett, and he kept telling me to call him Jim because he didn't want to feel like an old man. But he's starting to look like his old man if you see him, if you've seen him on the documentary.
To your knowledge, have any of the Crockett family had a chance to view the finished product? And if so, did they give you any feedback on it?
Well, that's the thing. I don't know because I've called Jim. I emailed Jim, and I've gotten no response. I've called Jackie and gotten no answer, and the only person that I haven't called is David. But I know they've received it. I don't know if they've watched it or if they watched it and they didn't like it or if they watched it and they just, you know, they were involved with it. They don't want to talk anymore. I don't know. I'd love to hear what their thoughts on it.
Yeah.
Myself.
It's a weird situation where sometimes, you know, even as much as we as fans or as, you know, consumers of content, as much as we live and breathe by professional wrestling and want to be, you know, wrapped up in it all the time, you oftentimes do kind of run into those people who made their living in it or did their time in it or what have you and have kind of moved on to something else. And it's a real testament to you guys and the whole crew that made the Crockett documentary happen. It's a real testament to you guys that you were able to kind of hold the Crocketts down and get them on tape and get them on film, something that may not, you know, may never be repeated. There may be, you know, nobody else that ever gets them to talk on camera for, you know, as candidly and for as lengthy an amount of time as you did. Going to run a couple of names by you that you've encountered thus far and just kind of give us maybe some thoughts on them as performers or even better would be, you know, firsthand accounts, memories of your time with them as you've been, you know, traveling and producing these feature-length documentaries. I guess the first and the most appropriate one would be a great friend of the show that we've talked about a number of times, Jimmy Valiant. You said he kind of helped start this journey for you, a story very similar to what we heard from Graham Coffin last time, that Jimmy was instrumental in kind of helping set him on a path towards pro wrestling. Jimmy and BWC, Boogie's Wrestling Camp, has put a lot of good people in the industry. Your experiences with him, your time spent with him, any memories or stories in particular that stand out from producing the Jimmy Valiant documentary or even the Crockett documentary with him?
He's the man. He's the man. He's the nicest guy in pro wrestling. Nothing bad to say about him. Without him, I wouldn't continue to produce these because he gave me a chance, he gave me a shot, and it's, if you've never been to BWC, like you said, it's an amazing facility, you know, a wrestling fan's dream to go there and just see what thing that he has. But just a first-class guy. He was so willing to do anything that I asked of him, and he understood what we were trying to do for him was to have his legacy live on in a documentary format for people to always remember him because, you know, WWE is not going to get around probably to him because there's so many guys that they have to deal with. And he understood that. He was open to it, knowing that I'd never had any experience doing it. So he's the man. I love him to death, and I'll never have anything bad to say about Jimmy Valiant.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Just a class act, one of the sweetest guys in the business, and a guy that has, I mean, this is a guy that's literally done it all, from, you know, Detroit and Indianapolis to Madison Square Garden to, you know, the China Grove Fairgrounds in China Grove, North Carolina. This is a guy that's done it all and been everywhere, and a story that, you know, was worth telling, and I commend you for, you know, having you know, both the tech savvy and the smarts and the keen awareness to get Jimmy Valiant a true living wrestling legend and get him to put his story on tape. Another friend of the show took part in, I know, the Crockett documentary, Jim Cornette.
I love Jim Cornette. He doesn't love me so much, and that's a whole different story, which I talked to Graham about yesterday. I love the guy. He's a little moody, but knows the wrestling business. He's a great soundbite, great interview. Anything that he's involved with is legitimate, and have nothing negative to say about Jim Cornette. Love my experiences going to his house and just seeing everything that he has from all the years of professional wrestling that he's collected. Is just a wrestling fan dream to see some of the stuff that he has. And I hope to maybe work with him again someday in the future, but right now he just isn't happy with me.
Yeah, another situation where sometimes people in the sport and in the business, Jimmy gets a little sideways with people sometimes, but I've always had nothing but wonderful experiences with Jimmy Cornette, and would be great to talk to him on here at some point too, if you're listening out there, Jimmy. The Rock and Roll Express.
I love those. That's my favorite tag team of all time. So what an experience to be able to do their story and to travel around with them and go to shows and see the fans still interacting with them. You know, a lot of people look at them and make fun of them today because Ricky's still got the mullet and Robert doesn't have much hair left. But, I mean, just to still see those guys go out there, it's special. And the fans still come out to see them and chant rock and roll. And it was such a cool and a surreal experience for me to be able to sit down and become friends with them and still be able to talk to them, you know, after the documentary is done and consider them friends. And I think personally that's my best work is their story. And if you haven't seen that one, it's worth checking out as well.
Yeah, you know, Ricky in particular, but the whole, you know, the Rock and Roll Express, but Ricky in particular are national treasures. You know, Ricky is the epitome of, the wrestler. I mean, Ricky is Randy the Ram in a better place and in a happier story. But, you know, this is the guy that's still out there all the time. Robert's a little more selective about, you know, his dates. Robert still stays busy, but he's a little more selective about his dates and where he goes and who he wrestles with. And Ricky is still out there every week, hustling and entertaining people and literally putting smiles on people's faces. Tell us about your most recent work, the Ivan Koloff documentary, another guy whose story deserves to be told and, in anybody's book, a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yeah, and it's a shame he hasn't gotten to the WWE Hall of Fame this year like that. Many people want to see him there. Ivan, again, is just, I don't have anything. Everybody that I've worked with, I can't say anything negative about, maybe one guy. But Alvin was just, he was just like Jimmy. He knew what we were doing. He's been involved with a few of the projects in the past, and he understood that, WWE is probably not going to get around him either. And he wanted this to be done for his grandchildren and for their kids, his great-grandchildren in the future. So they knew what he did with his life, and he wasn't just, a beat-up old guy goes to wrestling shows every once in a while. He understood that. It turned out really great. I'm very happy with the finished product. A lot of people think there's too much religion involved with it when they read the chapter list, but, that's Ivan's story. He's a born-again Christian. He goes around. We followed him to a church, giving his testimony. So, I mean, it's about 10 minutes of 2 hours, so don't overlook that part if you're, hesitant about violence.
It's interesting how you bring up, documenting these guys' life stories and telling their stories. In a lot of ways, Graham Coffin, do you feel a little bit of a kinship to Michael Elliott in the same sense as far as it was kind of became your mission to document all these results and all these live events? You two kind of have a lot in common as far as the urge to preserve wrestling's history.
Yeah, and I kind of picked up on that yesterday. Michael had me in to be part of an upcoming project. And the whole time I'm thinking, the questions that he's asking and the people that he's talking to, it's kind of similar to what I'm doing right now with some of these books, the MSG book, Baltimore book, what have you. Michael, tell me a little bit about, you've got a full-time job. You've got a family. How hard is it to juggle this? How time consuming is this? How much time are you spending in a given week on this kind of thing? And how often are you going out of town to track some of these guys down?
It's very time consuming, and I don't want to say it's hard. It's fun. It's hard, but it's fun at the same time. I really enjoy it. I always look forward to getting out on the road. My wife and my daughter are getting to the age where she's knowing I'm not going to be around. But it's definitely tough, you know, working 50 hours a week and then having the family life and then trying to squeeze in time to edit and research and shoot and travel. But when I'm working on a documentary, I'll probably spend about anywhere from 3 to 4 hours every night editing during the week, and then I'll probably take the weekends off because I'll be on the road driving wherever these guys are. I try to make it as easy on them as possible so they're, you know, they're cooperative. But it's fun, but it is tough. But, I really do enjoy it, and I hope to continue on.
Tell me a little bit about where you've been to track down some of these guys, because you're in the Charlotte metro area. Brad and I are in North Carolina, but a lot of these guys are not. So you mentioned Dallas earlier. Where else have you been, and have you enjoyed those experiences? I'm sure you're not really there to take in the city or take in the sights and sounds of where you're going, but have you been to any place that you've never been before and would like to go back to?
We just recently drove to Pittsburgh, and when we go there, if we have a little bit of downtime, you know, I usually take my wife or I try to find someone to, you know, ride with me, so it's not just myself. But, you know, we went to Pittsburgh. It's a beautiful city. Enjoyed the food. That's where we, you know, met Bruno Sammartino at his house, and that was a great experience. We've been to all up and down the East Coast, pretty much every state on the East Coast, and we went to St. Louis for Harley Race, and that's about as far as I've gone. And we went to Illinois for Larry Madison. But that's about mostly the East Coast is where we're at. If it's within driving range, we'll hop in the car. If not, we'll try to get somewhere out there. But recently just had to hire a guy out in Waco, Texas, because I wasn't going to go out to Waco, Texas. But hired a gentleman out there to shoot an interview with Stan Hansen for the same project that I interviewed you with for. We'll travel. If they're there and they're willing to talk, we'll come to them.
So tell us a little bit about the logistics of that, because you're not traveling light. You've got some equipment with you. What goes into making sure you can bring everything with you that you need, and how much do you need when you go out there?
Well, we take a camera, tripod, our light kit, and we have a little traveling set, which is like a black sheet with the color light. As long as they have a living room or, you know, a patio, we can set up somewhere. It's not, you know, this huge, it's a good size production, but it's not a huge production. So it fits in my little SUV.
What, if anything, coming up, we'll talk a little bit later about the projects that are on the horizon that are definitely coming up, but what would be the dream project for you, or dream projects for you, you know, that you maybe hope to get to one day?
I think a lot of people, including myself, want to see a Bruiser Brody documentary done.
Oh, very cool.
I'm talking to Brody's widow, Barbara, through Facebook. We're just kind of chatting right now, seeing if that's something she wants to really do. I don't have the budget. I'd probably have to do a Kickstarter because, you know, I think a lot of people want to hear from the Funks, and they're not cheap, and you got to get maybe even travel down to Puerto Rico and talk to some people down there. But that's just kind of something, you know, in the works. But again, if I do that, it's not going to, you know, Puerto Rico will be talked about, but it won't be, and I guess I don't want to say it's a selling point, but it's not going to be what the whole documentary would be about, is, you know, his death. I hope that happens. That's something I definitely want to work on. And selfishly, I want to work on a Tully Blanchard documentary, but I don't know if anybody wants to see that.
Oh, I think you'll find an audience for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the great, one of the all-time greats. You mentioned Kickstarter. Talk a little bit about your experience using, you know, Kickstarter and crowdsourcing and social media, you know, living in the age that we're living in now where it's easier to reach people and get people to support a project when it's still in development like this. Could these features that have been made been made possible without Kickstarter, or, you know, how big a role did they play in the big picture for the stuff that you guys have done at Elbow Productions?
Recently, without it, no, none of this would happen. The first two we did were very small budgets. A lot of the guys talked about Jimmy, you know, for free. I don't, a lot of wrestlers, you know, well, how much are you paying? Some of the questions, you know, now I know a lot of the guys, they'll work with me. They'll, you know, they won't, that's not the first question out of their mouth, but, simply without Kickstarter and the people that, you know, have faith in what we do, the Ivan Koloff wouldn't have been produced. Rock and Roll wouldn't have been produced. Jim Crockett promotion documentary probably never would have been finished. So it's been a huge help, and I appreciate everybody that hear this and they've helped out. Thank you, because without you, we can't continue to move forward, because to produce these things, you know, you need a budget from anywhere from $3,000 to $10,000, depending on what you're going to put into it, who you need to talk to, where you need to travel. And then making the finished product, we don't put them on DVDRs. We actually, they're real DVDs. We put the burn protection on them. So it's a professional product. If someone's giving it Kickstarter, we want to give them the best that we can.
Well, we will talk some more with Michael Elliott of Elbow Productions. We'll talk about what projects are on the horizon for him, as well as get in a little bit to the stuff that Michael has loved and enjoyed as a fan, which is the real spirit of Wrestling with Optimism, when we come back in just a moment after these words from some of the other great shows here on the Place to Be Nation. We'll be right back.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcast? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant.
Sorry.
The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pav. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week, join Marcus Vandenberg and myself for the world's most dangerous sports show and the program that's changing the game one show at a time, the Kings of Sport Podcast. Available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the Big Four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on PlaceToBeNation.com.
In Rhode Island, and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick. With over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers, and a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, ProWrestlingOnly.com, Scott Keith blog at RSPWFAQ.net, and PileDriverWrestling.net.
Welcome back to Wrestling with Optimism here on the Place to Be Nation. We've got Michael Elliott of Elbow Productions on with us today. And Michael, tell me a little bit about the difficulty in finding, you mentioned earlier about the Crockett family, but tell us a little bit about the difficulty of tracking down some of these folks that you'd like to talk to and the hurdles that you go through to get them to agree to talk. You did mention the Crocketts, but are there other examples that come to mind for you?
Off the top of my head, no. I think they were.
So it's just been them.
Yeah, pretty much. I think they've been so, you know, out of wrestling for so long that they were kind of the most to hardest to convince. But everybody else has been pretty easy to work with. When I interviewed Harley, he was kind of hard to get stuff out of. But he's been probably the most difficult guy to interview. But tracking people down is just building a network of people, you know, through Facebook and just meet them at FanFest. And, you know, Dick Warren's been a huge help locating people. And I also work at a television station. So we know ways of finding people and looking into them and finding their addresses, finding their phone numbers and getting in touch with people that way. So that's been a huge help as well, just having the background.
That sounded very CIA, what you just said right there. We have a way of finding people.
Well, we have a way of looking into things and finding people through the TV. So it's been a huge help as well.
Michael is watching your house right now on Google Earth.
Yeah, Brad, I can see what you're doing.
Oh, God. I hope not.
Cover those windows. Now going back to your fandom and how you got into wrestling, who are some of your favorites? What attracted you to the industry?
Just the spectacle of it, just the athleticism. I was a huge Sting fan growing up, so obviously I'm going to be watching WrestleMania this year. It's definitely his last match. I definitely want to see that. But huge Sting fan, just huge NWA, WCW guy all the way up until switching over to the WWF during the Attitude Era, but just the biggest Sting fan on earth, and I'm looking forward to that book you're working on about Sting. So that's, you know, just watching it every week. My brother was into football, so I had to be different. I was into wrestling.
So you when you were younger, you were saying that you would go to shows in Rock Hill. What do you remember about those experiences?
Just the atmosphere. Actually, one of the first matches I remember live involved Ivan Koloff at the Winthrop Coliseum in Rock Hill. And he didn't, you know, he didn't remember the match, but just seeing, just remembering him and just the crowd being so into it back in the day. I was just a little bored, but just the atmosphere and just watching the matches and just the magic that they used to have is what brought me into being a full-time fan of wrestling.
Now, a lot of the folks that may be listening may not be super familiar or may not have grown up in the era of Crockett Promotions and the height of, or not necessarily maybe not the height of WCW, but an older version of WCW, like the early 90s WCW. How would you compare those crowds to what you might find today from a modern WWE? What are some of the differences that you notice when you turn on Raw now?
I don't turn it on too often, to be honest with you. So I do know back then, you know, the fans were cheering and hollering. There were good guys and there were bad guys. And you loved the good guys, you hated the bad guys. Now you can't really tell who the good guy is, who the bad guy is, and people are just going on the internet and forming their own opinions and going to the shows, and it seems like they're trying to just cheer for whoever they want to succeed. I don't know, man. I'm not a philosophy guy, I don't know. But I just know that back then people were in it and they believed it, and it wasn't entertainment. It was pro wrestling, and that's what I loved about it.
Who do you remember most as a kid? You know, we have I have a little questionnaire that I give to everybody that comes on the show, and the first question is, who's your first favorite wrestler? But for you, for somebody that has, you know, gotten to meet so many heroes and talk to so many heroes, I want to kind of extend it a little bit, as many or as few as you want to name, the people that who's you remember gravitating to as a young person watching wrestling.
Obviously, I said Sting was one of the huge ones. Watching the Steiner Brothers, the Rock and Roll Express, and one that I always threw out there that I was a fan of when I watched WCW was Mr. JL. I liked the way he looked, and he liked the way he wrestled, and he was one of my favorites when I was a kid, too.
We, like I said, have a little questionnaire that we like to ask everybody that comes on the show. So we're going to get to that here in a few minutes. But before I do, what can you tell us about what is on the horizon for Elbow Productions? What can we expect to see? What are you working on right now? Or what can we expect to see announced soon? Or maybe even what can we expect to see finished, completed here in the next 10 to 12 months or so?
Well, we're hoping to have out the special collector's edition of the History and Tradition, the story of the National Wrestling Alliance here pretty soon. We're currently in production on Dale the Patriot Wilkes story. I know he's not a huge star, but he has a great story. I was a fan of his growing up as well. We're working on that currently. And you were talking about Ricky Morton being Randy's Ram. Me and Ricky are kind of discussing the idea of trying to do a reality, I don't know, a reality TV pilot or just a reality DVD of what his life is like today. He's got like 20 grandkids and 12 kids, so he's got an interesting story and life outside of the ring. And
how much money do you need for that? I'll open my wallet right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think he'll do it for free if we can maybe pitch it to a TV network or something. I think he would do it for free, to be honest with you. But we're just kind of talking about that and trying to figure out some dates where I can get up to Tennessee and go to his, you know, he's got a school now, so we'd include that. And that's about the only two things we're kind of working on right now. But there's a project that I think that would be huge, would be the Brody. And I'd love to do something called Death of the Territories and just talk to a lot of the guys that were in the territories and try to find as many of the bookers from that era and just talk to them about why the territory system died out and if it could work today and things like that. I think that would be kind of interesting to do.
Well, we certainly wish you all the best of luck as you continue to do what I think is a very noble thing, and that's, you know, documenting the stories of these great professional wrestlers that have entertained millions. You know, I think what you said about Ivan really rings true in the sense that he wanted to do it for his family, and so that his story will be documented. For anyone that's not familiar with you, where can we find your work? If you want to plug a website or a social media or anything, if people want to learn more about you, where can they learn more about Elbow Productions and the work you're doing?
On Twitter at Elbow Docs. You can find me on Facebook under Michael Elliott. Usually accept anybody that's a wrestling fan wants to talk to me about wrestling. And we have our website, elbowproduction.weebly.com. Yes, I've been too cheap to drop the Weebly at this point, but you can go there and order any of our stuff. If you want to get the Jim Crockett or Harley Race documentaries, I produce those through High Spots, so you can get them at highspots.com. But go to elbowproduction.weebly.com, support the little guys so we can continue to move forward and continue to do what we're doing.
And you really should support these guys, because like I said, it's very to be documenting and recording the stories of some of these great men. All right, we're going to end things here with our questionnaire. Just the first answer that comes to your mind, Michael, or if you want to take a second to think about it, feel free. Question number one, your earliest days as a fan, who was your first favorite wrestler?
Sting.
Michael? Still with us, Michael?
Yeah, you got it?
Yeah, your first favorite wrestler.
Whoa. Sting.
Right on.
Yeah.
As an adult or as a child, no matter what's the most excited you've ever been for a wrestling match?
Oh, man. I'll tell you, the last time I got up and jumped out of the chair was probably when TNA debuted Kurt Angle all those years ago. I was like, oh, my God. I jumped up. I was watching the pay-per-view, and they showed his video, and I was like, oh, man. So when TNA had Kurt Angle debut or announced that he was coming in, it was probably when I was the most excited.
Our regular listeners on Wrestling with Optimism know me. For whatever reason, I was always drawn to people like Kamala and Kabuki and the Wild Samoans. But for whatever reason, those were the guys that I gravitated to. So I ask everybody that comes on the show, who was your favorite monster, madman, freak, weirdo, your favorite just wacky, crazy, dangerous character that kind of fits that mold?
Does Bastion Booger qualify?
There you go.
All right. Yeah, I'll take him.
Living or dead, two people, four people, six people, whatever you like, what would be your fantasy dream match?
Oh, boy. Give me a second. I've never thought of that. That's a good question. I'll take, man, that's already happened. I don't know. Austin versus Hogan. I'll give you the.
There you go. Popular choice.
I don't know. Yeah, I'll go with that one.
You as a person, not so much your contributions in wrestling, but maybe the things or people that mean the most to you. It can be wrestling or not. Dinner with five people, living or dead. Who do you pick? Could be people from the industry. Could be people from history, relatives of yours, anyone throughout the history of the world. Dinner with five people, living or dead.
I'll stick with wrestling, man. I'll go Bruiser Brody, the British Bulldog. I want to have Ricky Morton there just for the entertainment. And then I'll take my wife and my little girl. That's five.
Very good. That's a good list. You thinking about your life and just your day-to-day life, what do you think about more, the past, the present, or the future? What do you spend most of your time thinking about?
In my personal life, I'm thinking about the future. If I'm thinking wrestling, I'm thinking in the past. Like I said, with a child, I'm always thinking about the future.
Michael, if you won the lottery tomorrow, what would you be doing 6 months from now?
I would probably be producing a lot more professional wrestling documentaries, and I'd be probably semi-retired, working at Walmart, greeting people in my spare time.
That's really cool that you would keep doing this. I can't say enough how much respect I have for you to, you know, like you said, some of these guys, their stories may never be told if not for people like you and the work you're doing. Last question. If the world as you know it was going to end tomorrow, how would you spend your last day?
I'd be playing kitchen with my 2-year-old my wife, spending some time with them, I guess.
I think not much a better way to spend those final hours than that. Michael, thank you so much for joining us again. Want to encourage everyone within the sound of my voice to please visit and support Elbow Productions and the work these guys are doing. Some amazing stories that are being told through them and really epitomize the spirit of this show. On behalf of Graham Koff and Dan McGinn and the whole team at Place to Be Nation, this is Brad Stutz saying thank you so much for joining us. We will talk to you next time right here on Wrestling with Optimism.